Hello, amigos. It's me again. Just wanted to thank you all for helping us meet our goal of $10,000 on GoFundMe. With your help, we're still here doing what we do best, and let's hope things pick up during the spooky season. The boss man is still working on paying down debts, however, and your continued support is greatly appreciated. If you'd like to keep helping all of us get out of the woods, you can link to our GoFundMe page by visiting helpchillin.org. That's all caps. HELPCHILLING.ORG. Hey, welcome back, friends. Hey, we're balls deep into September here, and I'll tell you, you can feel that chill in the air, and that lets you know fall is just around the corner. Hell, it was only 99 degrees today. I had to put on a damn sweater. How about you, Chester? It's called sarcasm, Chester. Still feels hot to me, he says. Let's just head in, friend. Why waste our clever banter on scaly pricks? All right. Hey, you know what else is pretty clever? You can download or stream our entire catalog ad-free. Just visit simplyscarypodcast.com and hit the Patrons area button. For $5 a month, you can basically pilfer anything you want from Craig's hard drive. And doesn't that sound fun? Anyway, tonight we've got a tale from Ronald McGillivray. I guess that's how you pronounce it. Sorry, Ronald, if I fucked that up. But this one comes from his new book, Tales from the Parkland, or Parkland, I'm not sure. Down here, we usually make words like that into two separate syllables, so Parkland becomes Parkland. Anyway, it's published by our good friends at Velox Books. So without further delay, from author Ronald McGillivray, I give you The Garbage Collectors. The bus pulled up to my stop, so I got off and began my short walk home. The same neighbors who'd ignored me in the morning were all smiles and waves as I passed by. I waved back and smiled, but I didn't stop to chat. I'd commented to my wife a few days earlier how strange our neighbor seemed, but she told me it was all in my imagination. I crossed the street and couldn't help but stare at the house that I'd dreamt about the night before. Just thinking about it caused me to shudder. In front of the house sat a van crammed with boxes and small tables. More furniture was piled on its roof. It looked like they were moving. I thought back on my dream as if it might have been a premonition. No, they must have been planning to move beforehand. I was still thinking about the incident when I walked in my front door.
Stephen, can you come in here, please?
My wife, Sarah, called from the family room. What now?
Patrick's upstairs crying and won't come out of his room.
She had a worried look on her face and she was fidgeting with some framed pictures on the shelf. Never a good sign. What's the matter? Is he sick?
No, something happened at school. I think some kids picked on him, but I can't get the whole story out of him.
Was he hurt?
No, I don't think it was anything physical. Can you try talking to him?
She asked, looking more than desperate. Sure, I'll go up there right now. It'll be fun, I said, trying to assure her. I placed my briefcase against the wall and walked towards the stairs. As I passed my wife, I stopped for a second to kiss her. I got the smile I was looking for and headed up the stairs. I heard sobbing from the other side of Patrick's door. I knocked a few times before I finally let myself in. Patrick was lying on his bed, his head facing the wall. He looked up briefly, and I could see he'd been crying for a while. His eyes were puffy and red, and he looked like he had been through the ringer. What a terrible day I had at work, I said, trying to commiserate with my son. Looks like you had a bad one, too. Want to come downstairs with me and have a beer so we can talk about it? That got a bit of a grin, but the sobbing started again. Without warning, Patrick jumped off his bed, ran over to me, and wrapped his arms around me. Whoa there, little buddy. What's the matter?
You wouldn't let anyone take me away, would you, Daddy?
What are you talking about? Of course not. Who'd help me with the chores? I tried to make a joke of it, but what he had said had put a knot in my stomach.
Some of the kids at school told me the garbage collectors were going to come and get me, and there was nothing you could do about it.
Patrick managed between sniffles. Garbage collectors? What are you talking about? Do you look like garbage? I asked, putting on my best Daddy Knows Best smile.
These are a different kind of garbage collectors,
he said, as tears welled up in his eyes. Okay, you'd better tell me the whole story from the beginning. Patrick seemed hesitant at first, but then opened up, letting it all come flowing out.
Kids at school told me that on the night before garbage day, the garbage collectors come out and hunt through people's garbage. They look for a sign that'll tell them which kid will be next to go to the dump.
Patrick took a deep breath. Oh, really? And what happens to these kids who end up at the dump?
They're eaten by the garbage collectors. It's what keeps the garbage collectors alive.
I see. Well, don't you think the parents might have something to say about it?
The parents are the ones who give the kids to the garbage collectors,
he said, tears streaming down his face.
If the garbage collectors come, can you give them Kim instead of me? I promise I'll be good and do everything you guys say.
I felt the knot move from my stomach up to my throat. The feeling of rage, which I knew so well, stirred inside of me like fire. I wanted to go find these kids and give them something to really be afraid of, but I'd worked hard at keeping my temper under control, and I wasn't going to blow all that hard work now. Don't worry. I have no plans to let either you or Kim end up at the dump.
Promise?
Patrick asked, looking at me with pleading eyes. Yes, I promise, I answered. So are these kids sent away because they're bad?
No. The families do it to save their other boy or girl.
What if the family only has one child? I asked, not so innocently, hoping to poke holes in the story.
No one does here. Everyone in town has two kids. Haven't you noticed?
He stopped for a moment to catch his breath.
Danny told me they only let you live here if you come with two.
What imagination kids have these days, I mused. Then I asked, why wouldn't the parents just pack up and leave if they found out about this?
We can't leave. There's no way out of here,
Patrick answered with all the conviction he could muster. Well, we came here from somewhere, didn't we?
Yes.
So, if we came here from somewhere, we can always go back there, right?
I suppose,
he answered. There you have it.
But they said people have tried to leave before and have always ended up coming back.
That's just nonsense. In fact, I just saw the people about eight houses down all packed and ready to move. Where do you think they're going?
That's the Donnellys. They have to give up their son tonight.
The other kids tell you that?
Yes,
Patrick answered. Well, if these kids know so much, did they tell you what these garbage collectors look like?
They're like shadows. They're all black and hate the light. They have big glowing eyes,
he answered, tears once again welling up in his eyes. I felt a cold sweat form on my back as I recalled the strange dream I'd had last night. I'd been looking out one of the bedroom windows when I noticed what I thought was just a shadow across the road. But hadn't the shadow looked like it had been going through the garbage? Then out of the corner of my eye, I noticed another black figure glide across the street to join it. I'd watched them as they inspected the neighbor's garbage, unaware someone was watching them. Suddenly, one of them had turned to face me, and I tripped over myself, landing on my ass. I'd slowly picked myself up and looked back out the window towards where the dark figures had been, but they were gone. Several crows pecked away at the garbage instead. As I turned away, a movement had caught my eye. And when I turned back, a dark figure sat crouched on my garage roof, staring directly at me. I had woken up drenched in sweat and immediately went to check on the kids. I thought about the dream for a moment until an idea popped into my head. Go get your shoes and your sister. We're going for a drive. I'll get Mom.
Where are we going?
Patrick asked, between sniffles. I'm going to prove to you that we can drive out of this town any time we want. A sudden look of relief washed over my son's face as he hurried into his closet to grab his shoes, calling out for Kim at the same time. I went back downstairs.
What's going on?
Sarah asked.
How's Patrick?
I think he'll be all right, I told her. Some kids told him a story and it had him spooked, so we're going to go for a ride in the car to make him feel better. Sarah looked at me strangely but grabbed her purse as Kim came down the stairs with Patrick right behind her. Okay, are we ready?
Where are we going?
Kim asked. We're going out for dinner to a restaurant this evening.
Which restaurant?
The first restaurant we come to outside the city limits. I'm going to prove something to your brother.
Let me guess. He told you we can't get out of here, right?
Her comment stopped me cold, and I looked at her in surprise. Why do you say that?
I heard the same story today at school. They told me I'd never be able to leave the city, and there was some evil force at work here.
Who told you that? Did you overhear Patrick and I talking?
No, I didn't hear you guys talking. Some losers in my class told me. There's a group of them who think they know it all, but they're nothing but brainless hicks.
Well, I'd have to agree with your description of the locals so far, I laughed.
Stephen!
Sarah cautioned me. It's true, honey. The neighbors haven't exactly been welcoming.
Maybe we should give them the benefit of the doubt?
She suggested. Sure, whatever. I'm just venting.
Okay, enough of this,
Sarah said.
Let's get going. I can't remember the last time your father offered to take us out, so we'd better get going before he changes his mind.
Everyone laughed as we headed out the door and piled into the car. I put the key into the ignition and started it up. So far, so good, I said with a big grin.
Just drive,
the three of them said in unison. I backed the car out of the driveway and followed the tree-lined street to the first stop sign and turned right. I followed the winding road until we came to a major intersection. Sarah spotted the sign to the highway first and pointed it out. I made a quick couple of lane changes until finally we were on the highway. Here we are then. Well on our way and no problems so far, I said, more to Patrick than anyone else. So tell me, Kim, what else did you hear about this place? I asked as I pulled into the far right lane and settled in for the ride.
It's just a bunch of nonsense,
she replied. Humor me.
Fine,
she answered, exasperated.
Allison Krimble said there are things living in or around the garbage dump. I can't remember which.
Go on, I prodded.
Anyway, supposedly the dump is on some old forgotten burial site. The things buried there feed off the life force of children,
she said, as she rolled her eyes. And do you believe the story?
Of course not, duh.
See, Patrick, your sister doesn't believe the story. Patrick didn't say a word, but continued to stare out of the window at the passing trees. The car was silent as we continued to drive down the highway. The sun was still bright in the sky, even though it was closing in on 7 o'clock. The sound of the wheels on the road gave off a hypnotic hum. I looked over at Sarah, and she seemed to be daydreaming. I took a peek in the rearview mirror and saw Kim sitting with her usual scowl. Patrick, though, seemed to be studying the outside landscape for something I couldn't fathom. Seeing this little trip wasn't helping my son the way I'd planned, I decided to strike the conversation back up. How do these things manage to find the children they want?
Well, supposedly they go through the garbage at night and look for personal items. That's how they decide who they're going to pick.
Going to pick? I asked.
Yeah, when they find the item they're looking for, they leave a mark or something, letting the family know they've been chosen to give up one of their children.
I see, I said with a smirk, looking at Sarah, who didn't seem to find any of this amusing. What if the family only has one child?
That's the only thing that spooked me. It seems everyone at school has either a brother or sister. And there doesn't seem to be any families with just one kid around here.
Once again, the car became silent.
Shouldn't we have reached an exit ramp by now?
Sarah asked, breaking the silence. Not sure, I answered. I got caught up in the story and wasn't keeping an eye out.
Well, it's starting to get late and the kids are probably hungry. Let's find the place soon, okay?
Sure, no problem. Once we cross the city limit, there's a restaurant on the other side of the highway. I remember seeing it when we first arrived.
Who would you pick?
Asked Patrick out of the blue.
What?
Sarah and I said at the same time.
Who would you pick? You know, if they came to our house and left their mark.
It's just a story, I answered, beginning to feel exasperated.
But just for fun, if you had to choose, which one of us would you send away?
The one who asked too many stupid questions.
Steven!
Sarah scolded.
Daddy didn't mean that. He was just trying to be funny. Well, I'm serious,
Patrick said.
I want to know, which one of us would you pick? Yeah, Dad, which one of us would you send to the monsters?
Kim popped in. Now they're monsters, eh? I thought they were garbage collectors.
Funny, Dad,
Kim said without a smile. Look, you two, it's just a story. But for the sake of an argument, if it was true, I would refuse to give either of you up.
Supposedly you don't have a choice,
Patrick said.
One of the kids in my class told me a family tried that once and barricaded themselves in their house.
And what happened? I asked, keeping an eye on the road.
The neighbors made the choice. They broke down the door and took one of the kids to the dump themselves.
Is that what you heard, Kim?
Yeah, Dad,
she said.
It's just a stupid story, right?
Of course, Pumpkin.
You know something, Steven?
Sarah said.
I know we've only been here for around a week, but now that I think about it, everyone I've met so far has two kids.
Not you too.
Don't you find it strange?
You're not helping the matter here, hon. Have you seen any signs for an exit yet?
No, I haven't,
she answered.
The sun's already starting to set and we should have hit the city limits a long time ago.
Maybe we missed it when we were all talking, I suggested, trying to sound optimistic.
Patrick?
Sarah asked suddenly.
What happens to the child who's left behind?
Sarah! It was my turn to be indignant.
It's okay, Dad,
Patrick said.
The kid that's left is given some sort of special powers.
And what is this special power? I asked, no longer hiding the fact I was getting tired of all this nonsense.
They wouldn't tell me,
Patrick answered. What about you, Kim? I tried again.
Same thing. They wouldn't tell me, but they said it was worth it. And the family goes away to a wonderful place.
A wonderful place, eh? I muttered, tapping the steering wheel in agitation.
Yeah, to make room for a new family,
Kim added.
That's why you never see a family with only one kid. Jesus, Steven, step on the gas and get us out of here. This whole thing is starting to freak me out,
Sarah pleaded. I accelerated and took another look into the rearview mirror, only to see the heartbreaking sight of my son crying quietly in the back seat. Rage began to flow through me again like a freight train. I couldn't recall feeling like this for some time. I'd battled with my anger management problems before and beaten them. So what the hell was wrong with me now? And where was the damn restaurant? The sun now set well below the tree line, and I was sure we should have been well past the city limits by now. But the highway seemed to just go on and on. There weren't even any bends in the road anymore, just straight highway as far as the eye could see. Once again, the car fell silent, and I wondered what everyone was thinking. The fact I couldn't reassure them that everything was going to be okay drove me crazy. not half as much as the thought that all of this might be true. We'd been driving for hours and nothing in the scenery had changed. There were no other cars on the road either. Sarah had stopped badgering me to turn around and sat in her seat mute, gazing out the window at seemingly the same trees we'd been passing for hours. Both Patrick and Kim were asleep in the back seat. What the hell was going on? I felt like I was going to be sick, but there was no way I'd go see that therapist again. The thought of it got me even more upset. "Sarah?" I asked, needing the comfort of another voice.
"Yes?"
"Do you want me to turn around?"
"I want you to tell me what's happening,"
she said with tears in her eyes. She looked into the back seat at the loves of her life. "I have no answers. I'm sorry."
"This can't be happening. This is all just some mistake, right?"
"I just don't know anymore."
"Then let's just go back. We're not getting anywhere. Besides, once we get home, we can call someone outside the city for help."
"And what are we going to say?" I asked, sounding a bit more sarcastic than I'd meant.
"Let's just go home,"
she said. I slowed the car down and looked at the dashboard clock. It was past 11 o'clock. My God, we'd been driving for almost 5 hours. This was madness. I did a quick shoulder check and turned the car around, heading back into town. My eyes felt heavy and I wondered if I'd be able to make it back without falling asleep at the wheel. As I drove along the dark, deserted highway, I tried to find flaws in the story the kids had told, but with what we had experienced so far, I couldn't. I thought about my office co-workers and how they all seemed like good, decent people. I couldn't see any of them buying into this crap. I pictured each individual I'd met at the office and recalled how they had all spoken with love when it came to their children. The memory hit me like a tidal wave. Everyone I'd spoken with had shown me pictures of their two kids. Two kids. Just as my eyes started to close from exhaustion, I spotted lights ahead. I glanced at the dashboard clock again and saw we had only been driving for about 10 minutes in this direction. How come we hadn't noticed the lights earlier? I focused on the lights as we drove towards them. I looked over at Sarah, but she was asleep. I decided to wait until we reached the restaurant before I woke them. I couldn't believe I'd started to buy into the kids' stories. I let out a little chuckle. I drove into the lit area, and my smile turned to a grimace of horror when I recognized where we were. We hadn't found the exit at all. We were back in the town we had been trying to escape. I looked back at the dashboard clock and calculated the drive, which took almost 5 hours one way, took only 15 minutes on the way back. I wanted to scream in frustration, but held it in for the sake of my family. I looked over at Sarah beside me and at my two precious children who were asleep and felt lost. I exited the highway and found myself on Main Street. I followed it through town, passing businesses and restaurants. As I drove along, everything looked and seemed so normal. What was I expecting, I wondered? Should there be people in the streets wearing druid costumes or something more fitting for a city that gave up their own? I saw the sign I'd been looking for and turned left. I followed the road until it turned to dirt and continued on. I had a purpose now because I had just remembered that today was garbage day. I followed the dirt road, which became bumpier the further I drove. The road led into a dense forest. The trees were close to the road and seemed to grab out at the car as it passed by. Visibility became worse. Maybe this wasn't such a great idea. I looked around at my family, but they were still asleep. So I kept driving. Finally, I saw a clearing ahead. I slowed down and took another look at the dashboard clock. It was a few minutes before midnight. There was a bend in the road ahead, so I slowed down. In the glimmer of the headlights, I saw the sign. Town dump. I stopped the car to stare at it for a moment, then continued around the bend. There it was. A fiery glow from behind one of the mounds of trash lit up the area around it. I saw movement ahead and squinted my eyes in an attempt to see better. In the soft light of the dump's eerie glow, I spotted the woman who lived in the house where the packed van had sat this morning. I didn't think she had noticed me yet, so I turned off the headlights and drove closer. She wasn't alone. Her husband was there as well, and they were both looking at something on the other side of the fence. "Oh my God!" I whispered in horror, following their gaze. Inside the dump's compound, a young boy around the same age as Patrick stared through the fence. The boy faced his parents, rattling the gates, trying desperately to get out. Through the car window, I could hear the boy crying and pleading with the couple to let him out. The woman cried as well, but the man held her firm. I watched the boy beg for his parents' help while turning his head around constantly, as if to see if something was coming up behind him. I wasn't sure what to do. Instinctively, I wanted to plow my car through the gate and rescue the boy. If I ran down the parents, so much the better. But I had my own family to think of. This whole thing was insane. At that moment, the fiery glow brightened, lighting almost the entire area. I couldn't take my eyes off the pleading boy, who now shook the fence even harder. The boy was in a frenzy. He tried to climb the fence but was unable to manage it. Something else caught my eye. From behind the glowing mounds of garbage, dark figures had begun to emerge. I watched in horror but dragged my eyes away to check on my own boy. When I looked back, the young boy was trying desperately to dig under the fence with his fingers, always looking behind them. To my shock, I noticed the parents walking away, turning their backs on their own flesh and blood. I felt nauseous and my head began to spin. There were too many emotions going through me at once, and I felt as if I were going to go mad. The black figures closed in on the boy. He was back on his feet, shaking the gate with both his little hands and calling out for his mother. A switch seemed to go off in my head, and before I knew what I was doing, I had the headlights back on and the car speeding through the gate. The boy started to run, the black ghouls closing in on him. Why hadn't I acted sooner? I continued to drive faster towards the gate at a good ramming speed. As the gate got closer, the car's headlights lit the area ahead of me. I saw the terrified boy running as fast as his little legs could carry him over and around the garbage heaps, trying desperately to get away. The boy stumbled, and before he could scramble back to his feet, the black forms were on him. I took my foot off the gas pedal and let the car coast to a stop. I'd been too late. I pressed my head against the steering wheel and drew deep breaths. The image of the little boy was forever burned into my memory. I felt tears well up and I choked down the scream building up within me. Once again, I was overcome with a myriad of emotions, but one emotion stormed to the top of the heap. Rage. I turned the car around and drove away, desperately trying to work out a plan to protect my family. I spotted the parents of the little boy walking glumly along the side of the road. They didn't even turn when the headlights illuminated them. Just as well, I thought, as I gave the car a little gas and ran them down. I hated them for not warning me about the dump. I hated them all. I turned on the windshield wipers and gave a few quick bursts of wiper fluid to clean off the splattered blood now covering it. I looked down at the dashboard clock. It was well after midnight.
What's going on?
Sarah asked, startling me. Sorry, hun. Did I wake you?
No, I think I was having a nightmare. Where are we?
She asked, still half asleep. While you were dozing, lazy bones, I found our mysterious exit. I lied. We must have passed it while we were telling our ghost stories. Everything's fine. I tried desperately to gain control of the rage I'd let loose.
Why do you have the windshield wipers on?
She asked.
Did it rain?
No, we hit an animal. It ran out from the woods and I didn't see it in time.
Are we almost home?
She asked as if she hadn't heard my last statement. Yep. I just wanted to go check out the dump first.
The dump?
She repeated, still half asleep. Yeah, it's just a dump. Nothing unusual there. I just had to see it for myself.
And you found the city limit and the exit we were looking for?
She asked hopefully. Yes, and we can come and go from the city anytime we want, just like I said. That was all the reassurance she needed as she fell back into her interrupted sleep. I drove home and parked in the driveway. I nudged Sarah awake and then woke up the kids and got them safely into their beds. I guess I still owe you guys a dinner, I said with a smirk as we walked into the bedroom.
Don't worry, I'll remind you,
she said, smiling back at me. She kissed me on the cheek.
Are you coming to bed?
In a bit. I just want to check out the front of the car and clean whatever blood's still on there. Don't want to freak out the kids tomorrow morning.
Okay, don't stay up too late.
Sarah got into bed.
Won't be long before you have to get up again.
I'll be up soon. I walked over to the bed and gave her a soft kiss on the lips.
What's that for?
Just for being the best wife a guy could have. I stopped in the washroom where I threw some cold water on my face and took a good long look at myself. I wasn't sure I liked what I saw. I walked next to Kim's room and looked at her for a moment. I smiled and placed a gentle kiss on her forehead before going into Patrick's room and doing the same. Good night, slugger. And with tears in my eyes, I walked from the room. I went downstairs and followed the back hallway past the laundry room to the garage door. I stood there for a minute before finally opening it and stepping into the garage. I turned the light on, crossed the garage, and began clearing a spot on my workbench. I spotted the locked metal box I was looking for and carefully took it down from its resting place. I unlocked it and opened the box. The revolver gleamed. I took out 4 bullets, kissing each one of them before loading them into the gun. I held the gun in my hands as I knelt and prayed, tears streaming down my face. Afterwards, I stood up and slowly walked to the garage door that led into the house. I turned off the garage light and opened the door and entered the house. For the last time. And that was The Garbage Collectors by Ronald McGillivray. Ronald's collection, Tales from the Parkland, is available now from Velox Books in Kindle, print, and audio. Check out the link in the show notes or just head to www.veloxbooks.com where you can find Ronald McGillivray and plenty of other excellent authors you've heard on this show. And again, if you're the listening type, Tales from the Parkland is available right now on audible.com. A little about the author. Ronald McGillivray is a writer from Ottawa, Canada. He's published short stories, scripts, novellas, and his most recent novel, The Candy Witch, is available now in print or ebook. The short story, The Garbage Collector, was published in Horror Library Volume 2, as well as in their Best Of anthology. His story, Headcase, was made into a film produced by Columbia College in Chicago. His film script, Magic Man, was optioned by Hyde Park Media, and his stage play, The Line, was chosen as part of the reading series by the St. John Theater Company. Thanks, Ronald, and a special thanks to Velox Books.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend. And here, drop this bag in the garbage on your way out, would you? Thanks. There may or may not be some kids in there, in a manner of speaking. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. Enjoy the rest of your summer, and until next time, go fuck yourselves. Good night, my dear friends. Good night.